Hi there, and welcome to NARC, Narcissistic Abuse Recovery Collaborators, home to NARC Troopers. This is the site where we're going to figure out all this stuff about what's the truth about narcissism? What is the truth about recovery from relationships with narcissists? And this is not, just a bunch of pop psychology, but it's deeply researched, deeply informed, and I rely on only the most expert people in the mental health field to distill their wisdom on this subject and their years of research. So I think you will find something of substance here that can help you understand and to get past this, to move on, to be free, and to make some kind of peace, with it. Okay, so today we're going to talk about how words matter, but the narcissist doesn't speak your language. Trying to communicate with a narcissist is a futile exercise in failure. You're setting yourself up to fail, and you think you're communicating. You're doing it 50 different ways, left, right, and center, being creative and adaptable and whatever. And you're trying to think of all these new ways to just frame it the right way. So suddenly they're going to have an epiphany. Boom, a light bulb is going to come on, and they're suddenly going to be, a normal person, and they're going to hear you and they're going to see you. That's not going to happen. It is not going to happen. And we're going to talk about why. So, it is impossible to communicate with a narcissist, regardless of the words that you choose. It's just, it's not going to happen. You know, during this past Christmas, I was at Walt Disney World. That's been, seems a long time ago now, since it's almost summer. But I noticed that in a lot of situations where the crowd was being unruly or a group was acting inappropriately, the staff would say something like, "Friends, friends, I need you to step back behind the line. Friends, friends, please, let's all be seated at this time, friends," and they would talk to us like that, right? And I thought to myself, I don't know you. You're not my friend. And it seemed a little, I know it's very popular now to say that, to get the right political correct vibe going or something. But, I was just thinking about the power of words and how they're used, they're weaponized sometimes, right? Let's remember to keep our hands and our feet inside the vehicle at all time, friends. Vaping is not allowed on the Jungle Cruise, friends. Okay, so you get my point, right? You have to choose your words carefully. So clearly, corporate has co-opted this term friends to be sort of a gentle way to do crowd control and, to keep people in line and to get them to cooperate with each other and all that, which is something that seems a lost art these days. Maybe we need to think about this. It seems almost like a microaggression. You know what a microaggression is? It's sort of a passive aggressive little itsy bitsy teeny weeny little, it's a little pinch. It's a little prick, not in the sense of little prick, but little prick, like a pin prick. And, it has some brand of douchebaggery, I think, that comes with it, that, allows people to hold sway over others by using the F word. And I'm the F word, get your mind out of the gutter. I'm talking about the word friends. So this realization first hit home as I was sitting on that safari ride at Animal Kingdom. And the transport was filled with, many young families and babies, and ranging from about 8 months upwards to about 18 months, maybe 2 years old. These squirming, wiggling bundles of joy were absolutely clueless about what we were getting ready to see, like a wild safari park adventure in a Jeep that's really bouncy. And I don't even think they know what animals are, some of them at that age, maybe they can say puppy or kitty, but really most of this is going to be lost on them, but yet they're there, they're on the ride. Not sure about that, but the parents seemed even more clueless about what was going on, and they managed their children, or really didn't manage them, by just kind of holding on to them like a football, and not really too aware of anything else. They kind of had a loose hold onto their tiny little progeny, and there were a lot of sharp turns, and we were surrounded by a variety of animals like crocodiles, giraffes, bears, ostriches. I've heard that ostriches are very mean and will do bad things to you, and you don't think of them as dangerous, but they are. Hyenas, there's something for you. And what other kind of animals? Let me look at my notes. There were lions and tigers, and no bears, but they were dangerous things. And even though they were a little bit over there, they were still there. And I'm coming to a point. These distracted parents seemed like they were unaware that their child could just easily be catapulted, jettisoned, whew, out of the vehicle on one of those sharp turns if they're not paying attention and have a really good grip, and tumble, bounce, whatever, down the hill into the mouth of a crocodile, for example, or worse, if you can imagine that. What could be worse than that, right? Children, have been eaten by crocodiles, not crocodiles. No, let me take that back. I want to be factual here. Children have been eaten by alligators in this area of Florida before. It is, you should Google that. It really happens. So here you are in this situation, and these folks seem to just not be paying attention, maybe losing their grip. I don't know. And so speaking of losing your grip, the person who was commandeering this vessel initially said a very frustrated, barely contained and trembling request. He said, friends, hold on to your children and stop passing them back and forth. It didn't even sound like a sweet Disney voice, but under the circumstances, I would have booted them off and said, look, this, come back when your kid is more than just a tasty nugget for some of this, because this doesn't seem appropriate and you don't seem to be paying attention. So Bocephus back there and his clan were uncooperative, since nobody gets to tell them what to do. You know that attitude? The people these days, it's like, nobody's going to tell me what to do. How old are you? 5? Sometimes people do tell you what to do for a reason, right? But this normally 10, 15 minute thing was double the time because it was double the time getting started because there were so many delays. But to make up for that, for lost time, we blazed through that thing 90 miles an hour. We did not stop for photo ops. We did not get to enjoy what some people had waited 2 hours to ride because it was like a speed journey to offload these people who were being uncooperative, And, there was a rhinoceros by the side of the road pretty close by. And it would have been great if we could have stopped and gotten a picture of that. But no, we were in a hurry now. And so it was like just a brief nod to that, like, everybody look to your right. Okay, let's forge ahead. So sometimes communication just breaks down and becomes impossible. It's as if you're not even speaking the same language. And here's my point that I want to get to. I share this experience to illustrate a point. There was a point to that story. That words, even when weaponized and used to control a situation, are ineffective and even impotent or inflammatory to those who are incapable of receiving them, because they just are not capable of receiving the words. For those of us who have had parents or partners who were raised by other people who possess some kind of, you know, personality disorder or something like that, I think it disabled their children in a way that now the lasting damage is such that they have a real trouble processing language in the sense that you and I do. And so my mother suffered from numerous mental health issues, and, you know, it rendered her deaf for all practical purposes. And, you know, until the day she died, I don't believe she ever heard a single word that I said, or if she did hear it, she couldn't, it was like in a different language. She didn't process it. Her interpretation of it, her perception was like really off. You know, my father was absent a lot, usually at the golf course or something like that, which is a great place to be. Golf courses are amazing. But, you know, that's another type of deafness. And when you have a parent that can't hear you and another parent that's not there to hear you, you develop a hearing deficit and a listening deficit and a communicative, interpersonal, social deficit where typical exchanges just aren't happening. You know, you don't have the ability to do that. So life with a partner or spouse that has narcissistic personality disorder or psychopath, they are disabled with a break in effective communication. It's not just the partners who maybe had some kind of failed experience in their childhood. You know, that sets you up to accept this pattern of communication. Does that make sense? If you had that lack of learning how to communicate effectively and you were not heard and you were not seen, as was true with myself, then we grow up believing that that's just normal, that that's how it is with everybody. Like nobody's really, you know, like having an exchange and understanding and listening and acknowledging and responding. You know, we don't know how to do that. We've accepted that our brains have adapted to that kind of dysfunction. So when the narcissist comes along, it doesn't strike us as being anything weird, uncanny, creepy, like there's something wrong with this person. We don't notice because we grew up in a place where there was something that was wrong. And so we've been groomed. We've been desensitized to that kind of dysfunctional, toxic, weird disability within the family or within the communicative dynamic. So, you know, it doesn't matter what word you choose to use with a narcissist, because they cannot receive them in the way that we hope. You know, they can't process them and even make sense of it. And they just can't hear you. That is the truth of it. They just can't hear you. And, you know, we all want to feel understood. One of my pet peeves is like, oh my gosh, I'm going to be misunderstood. Somebody's not going to understand me. This is a terrible thing. Well, you know, I guarantee you that's going to be what happens with a narcissist, because they take communication to, you know, how do I say it? To a whole new dimension, because they live in another dimension and an alternate reality and something really weird. Word salad is a common thing that happens with people with NPD, where they talk in circles and they say so many things that are weird and whatever, that at the end of it, it's kind of like they did just like, what's going on here? They, they say so many things without saying anything that makes sense, and then, or at least anything that you can understand. And they really are incapable of digesting what you have to say. So regardless of how many times that you try to reach out to them on an authentic, normal, neurotypical kind of level, words are lost. And if you were raised by people who had this deficit, then it's gonna not seem so strange to you when the narcissist reacts the way they do. It's gonna be like, okay, this is the way people react. They do weird things, say weird things, or they're absent in some way, because they are incapable of experiencing the world of reality. And they have constructed a false persona. And this false persona is it requires a false narrative to go with it, so that everything that they experience is filtered through that, and reality never gets through. Everything about that, what they hear and see and experience, has to support and reinforce this false narrative, this facade, this delusional version of themselves that is so grandiose and perfect and superior and so omnipresent and omniscient and so above the regular folk that you know, they don't even think anything's wrong. You're the one that's got something wrong with you, because you know, how dare you try to like talk to them about something that they can't deal with. The narcissist internalizes the external. We know this, I think, and experiences their life through interactions with those internal constructs that are altered, photoshopped, and eventually devalued. And they never, ever experience anything in their true authenticity and their true form. There's no truth. There's no reality. There's no physical object constancy. That's just not, it's all internalized in their head. And when they're reacting with you, it's really just that paper doll version. Remember paper dolls? Maybe we don't have paper dolls anymore. I don't know. I've never seen them. But when I was a little girl, we had paper dolls. We put little paper dresses on them with little tabs we folded down and put on the shoulders, and we could change their little paper dresses on the little paper doll. Anyway, probably that's a moot reference to a lot of you, but it's a shame. Paper dolls were so exciting. So they may never become I'm not going to say they may never. I'm going to say they will. They will never be able to truly hear what's happening. And, you know, because they are disordered to the point where they're delusional. It is a delusional disorder, which is a trauma response to something that happened to them, and a maladaptive response to a childhood gone wrong. So there's permanent damage that happens there to their inner core that renders them unreachable. And there is nothing that can be done to ever truly heal them or fix them or put them back together again. You know, Humpty Dumpty, he ain't like, you know, it's not like he just got a little crack. He's egg salad now, you know. Humpty Dumpty is like a fritter or something, like an egg quiche or something. You know, he's not coming back to his original form as an egg sitting on that wall. What was he doing sitting on the wall in the first place? Have you ever wondered about that? If you're an egg, you're not going to be in a high place dangling next to something where you could just fall off and go splat. Okay, so I think weird things sometimes. We surround ourselves with people who can listen. Obviously, we need that as humans, and communicate and understand. You know, when they are gone, it's also equally as futile to try to receive closure or understanding about what has actually happened during that relationship with them, because none of it was real. And this is something that is incredibly difficult to accept. Like, oh my gosh, what do you mean it wasn't real? It seemed real, felt real, tasted, felt, you know, the whole experience seemed very real, but it isn't. And so they, what do I want to tell you now? I lost my place on my little notes here. Let me look and see what I have written down. Okay. Any communication, whether verbal or written, cannot be received or acknowledged because they are incapable of processing it. Parts of their brain that allow them to process language and stuff, it's just not, it doesn't work. The same part of the brain that doesn't allow them to have emotional empathy or anything like that. They may have concrete empathy, but they don't have the kind of empathy where they're really feeling what that other person is feeling. They don't. They don't feel what you feel. They don't understand why you're so upset when they leave. They don't know what that feels like. It's like, just get over it. You know, go get some tacos tonight with your friends, and then you can go out and start trying to find your next replacement tomorrow, and it'll be fun. And, you know, I'm going to have fun doing that, like, tonight. So bye now. Good luck. And they just, it's like, what? You could have been married to them for 30 years, and that's going to be their attitude. They're going to dance away, moonwalk away into the distance without even an inkling of understanding of what suffering because of something like that feels like. They have no idea. So stop screaming into the void. You're only going to hear the echo of your own voice, because that's how it is. And isn't that what it is to be a narcissist? An echo, a reflection? And so I think that that's right. There's nothing there. They are an absence. And, you know, they will see what they want to see, hear what they want to hear, revise history, fabricate new stories and that aren't even never happened. They'll fill in the gaps of their discontinuous memory and their disconstellated self. Well, that's a mouthful. they will just make stuff up and fill in those blanks and believe it. They'll believe themselves for whatever fiction that they create. They should win a Pulitzer Prize for that or something. So, you know, and another part of that is that they blame shift and they play the victim. And before it's all said and done, after they smear you the way they do preemptively a lot of the time, then people believe it, because it's like, why would they say all that stuff maybe months or years before they actually departed, to like prime the pump, get everybody on their side, make it very credible to believe, like, wow, that person is psycho. I am the victim. I don't know how I put up with it all those years. I've suffered. I deserve my freedom. Oh my gosh. They'll really spin it that way. And there will really be people who will believe them, because, oh my gosh, they're so convincing. So they're going to, you know, they're going to do all these things. And all the time, they're going to have seething contempt for you. Seething contempt. They hate you. And it's not your fault. It's nothing personal. They hate you because that's what they have to do to justify leaving. You deserve to be left. You deserve to be discarded, ejected, thrown away into the trash heap, because you are a bad, bad person and you've done bad things to the poor narcissist. And, oh, you know, you've hurt them so much and deceived them and whatever, you know, when actually they're the ones who did that. And you did nothing, nothing wrong. So it's all, I mean, it's not like they're calculating, like, I need to do these things to make people get on my side. What makes them so believable is that they believe it themselves. What makes all of their crazy, delusional nonsense believable is that they actually believe it. Yeah. And so what do? They put a torch to it and they burn the whole thing to the ground, scorched earth policy, and then they just move on to the next shared fantasy with some unsuspecting, vulnerable person who may, most likely, but not always, most likely has been sort of groomed for this position that they're getting ready to assume. That makes it easy. That makes it an easy latching on to the narcissist. And, you know, they're going to drag all the same disabilities along with them that will prevent them from ever being able to have a real relationship with anybody that's going to last and be for real. Some of these people stay in relationships as long as it's something beneficial to them for decades. That doesn't mean it's real. And it doesn't mean that they're really attached to that person that they've been married to all those years or anything like that. So frankly, some people just don't speak out. Some people don't have language that they can use in a normal kind of way. I think that's what I want to say. You know, it is incumbent upon ourselves to find our own tribe who understands our words. The narcissist doesn't have their own words. They're going to co-opt yours. They're going to mirror it, parrot it, and reflect it. And it'll become yours, theirs. You know, it's like one mind, hive mind. They take not just your heart, but everything else, personality traits, characteristics, your likes, your dislikes, your dreams. All of it become theirs. They become you. And with that being said, you know, friends, we're back to that. We must stop trying to speak to the disordered person in some kind of nonsensical language that they're never going to be able to understand because they can't hear it. And, you know, and while we're at it, let's expunge the word friends from our corporate vocabulary in the workplace, the classroom, the business world, and maybe even theme parks. Because, you know, you need to save your words for the people who can actually hear them, you know, without being cajoled to do so and without judgment. And so, I want to say one last thing before we go. Put my notes away and just try to go off of what I want to say in my head. I think that everything we've said today about being heard, trying to be heard, trying to talk to a narcissist, how it's not going to work, and how we could have some deficits that we bring to the table. Because of how we were raised that make it really easy for the narcissist to do what they do without like throwing up red flags all over the place because it seems normal to us. But I also want to say that the narcissist's brain doesn't develop in a normal kind of way. So that as a result of this brain damage that they have, their language is compromised. And a lot of times, you know, until they figure out how to like kind of echo and mimic other people's voice and stuff, they don't really have one of their own. And they have to latch on to somebody and take that voice because they have trouble actually literally speaking. I remember when I first met my ex who was a somatic covert narcissist, you know, we'd go up to the drive-up window and nobody ever knew what the hell he was saying. He would order and he'd have to say it like three times. And finally, I would yell it across the seat, you know, we want the 5-piece chicken nuggets, and because they would never be able to understand. It was really weird. And so speech, language, the way hearing is processed that comes in and is supposed to go through things and like, oh, okay, I got that, is really messed up with these folks. And they're not faking it or just being difficult or whatever. If we, meaning people like myself who were raised in a way to think that, bad communication or no communication, it's just how it is. If we get with these people, there's no early warning system to tell us that something's wrong. And so we don't notice, and you can even hear it. I heard him ordering at that window. I listened to him trying to talk to people at the bookstore and at the movie theater and at restaurants, whatever, And I knew something was really off, but I also filtered that through my own experience, which changed everything. There's something called the uncanny valley. It comes from like robots that are very human-like. They have those. I think, I don't know, Japan, someplace like that, has robots now that look just like I could be a robot, right? And you could be sitting there with it and talking to it. It has a voice and it has skin and it looks like a person. But you get this feeling that there's something off. You can't put your finger on it. And you feel like, what is that thing that's just off here? And that is called the uncanny valley effect. I learned that from, of course, Dr. Sam Vaknin, where I learned probably at least 50% of what I know about all of this comes from him. I listen to him every day for the last 5 years, sometimes twice a day. His lectures are profound. They're fact. They're indisputable. And I have such gratitude for him sharing those lectures. Anyway, the whole uncanny valley thing comes up, red flag. What's wrong with this person? Well, they're a robot. And so I want to end with this thought. That person with narcissistic personality disorder, whether it's your mom or your dad or your brother, sister, your partner in life, your child, you're going to know something is wrong with this person, but you're not going to be able to put your finger on it. You're going to hear it, you're going to see it. You're going to think, what is happening here? Something is not quite right. Something is rotten in Denmark, whatever that means. That seems like a definite slight, disparaging thing to say about Denmark. I hear it's a beautiful country. It's cold, it's clean, relatively safe. People are civilized there. But yeah, you know that there's something really, really off, but, a completely neurotypical person who had a healthy upbringing, like, Brady Bunch, Cosby Show. You can't say Cosby Show anymore as an example of the perfect family with Claire Huxtable, because since Bill was such a perv, you can't do that. Can't go there now. But I did think Claire Huxtable was the perfect mom and he was the perfect dad, perfect pop with his pudding pops and all that before I realized that, he's kind of pervy. See, they'll surprise you. But yeah, you know why you have that weird feeling? Because here's my final thing. They are that robot. They are that empty, soulless, mechanical, robotic being. That's what they are. They can upload information and they can spout it out. Talk about AI. They're trying to teach AI now to how to have emotions, or at least how to replicate emotional resonance and empathy. Crikey, is that a good idea? Because that would, if they master that, and why would we think they couldn't at some point, then it would be indistinguishable, a person from a robot. And right now, there is that uncanny valley creepy feeling. But in the future, there may not be. But I guarantee you this, as long as there are people with cluster B disorders, and as long as this person is a diagnosed malignant pathological narcissist, you're going to feel that. You may not even be able to feel it with robots that have AI, but you're going to be able to feel it with that person. And you should not dismiss that, because that's your early warning signal, alarms going off, sound the alarm. That's it. They are a robot. They're empty. They're vacant. No one's home. They're just regurgitating what's fed into them. And it may seem super, super real and all of that, but it's not. It's not. It's not real. It really isn't. So I want to end with that. And I'll be back with you soon. Sidebar, I've had, I don't want to do TMI. I had hernia surgery recently. I've been kind of out off the grid. I've been taking medicines that make it kind of hard, brain fog, whatever. I'm getting back and I am here and I'm not going anywhere. I'm going to keep talking about this subject as long as I have breath. Something about being married to a narcissist for 16 years and allowing them participating in being a co-conspirator in a relationship with a disordered person that ruined my life and caused me to lose every single thing that I ever cared about. Yeah, I think that's enough motivation to keep me talking about this for the rest of my days because I don't want that to happen to anyone else. I want you to heed those warning signs, those red flags. Step away. You're going to go off the cliff. It's going to be ugly. No matter how deliciously wonderful it may seem, it's not. If you have that gut feeling, listen to it because it could save your life. I wish somebody had told me what I'm telling you right now. Oh my gosh, it would have saved me 20 years of lost time. And that's where we are now. So, okay. Much love to all of you, and I will see you again soon. Okay, bye.